Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
And today we are still catching up. So much going on.
You can't take a month off and not have a million things to talk about that you hadn't gotten to just yet.
I feel like we could probably catch up for like 3 months.
I'm going to feel like we're trying to play catch up for the next 3 months. That's for sure.
Good stuff.
Holy cow. Too much going on, actually. So one of the things that we didn't actually talk about in the last episode was I cheated on you.
I cheated on you.
And I mentioned it a couple times. I was not meaning to rub it in your face, but I did cheat on you.
They've already heard the episode.
I just need to ask for your forgiveness publicly.
No, you don't.
That was wrong of me, and I'll never leave you again. I'll never do that to you again. I love you, man.
Philip,
what a mess.
You're okay.
All right. Well, no, I'm glad that we're back. We've got an action-packed episode.
Let's start with this. All right. Facebook is mining Instagram photos.
You got to say the title. You got to say the title that I put in the doc.
Oh, okay, fine. Facebook be creeping, y'all.
Facebook be creeping. I'm not going to say the A word. I'm not going to say the A word for the entire episode. We're not going to do it. We have a fighting chance to not mention it once.
Good luck. We'll see.
Do you see this? Okay. Do you see the? Okay. I'm just telling you.
No. We're both well aware of that.
We're opening with a Facebook story. I just want to set everybody's mind there. Okay.
And when you say A word, you mean AI, right?
No, that's not what I meant. But yes,
we will say AI. We do have an AI. Yeah, we do.
Okay. Here's the deal. Facebook, which owns Instagram and everything else that you interact with every day in your life. Is this really a story
that Facebook is using AI to
look at Instagram photos? It's crazy.
Yeah. If you didn't already think that Facebook was looking at your Instagram photos, then you're just naive.
It's not even mining. It's just they're literally looking at their own data. This is like saying, Facebook is reading your Facebook posts. Really?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So interesting. I wonder how Facebook's going to deal with GDPR. I mean, obviously.
Oh gosh.
I'm sure everyone's already talked about this, but
this is a story, actually. There's a whole story about this. There was this wonderful Twitter rant that I retweeted. I mentioned this over on the Mage Talk podcast, but there's this great Twitter rant in which somebody said, everybody, check out this email that I just got from Facebook. And it was a screenshot of, Gmail. And it said, Matthew, please accept Facebook's new terms of service before May 25th in order to enjoy uninterrupted, Facebook or whatever. And he's like, let's just take that subject line of the email and let's just break that apart in how non-GDPR compliant just the subject line is. To begin with, one, I never gave you permission to personalize email toward me. That's number one. Number two, the very spirit of GDPR is that you cannot run a service like Facebook and insinuate.
Oh, wait, period. Was there a period?
Right. There was the whole point. The whole point, well, yeah, there's a period right there. You cannot run a service like Facebook, period. But if you do run a service like Facebook, you cannot insinuate that you will be cut off from using the service if you do not accept their onerous terms of service and be tracked in everything you do. You have to give people the right to use your service and opt out of onerous tracking and analytics.
That's GDPR.
That is GDPR. The fact that Facebook is even insinuating that your service will be interrupted if you don't accept the new terms of service is itself a violation of GDPR, which is crazy. Anyway, I find this endlessly fascinating. So, so Facebook is using its own data through Instagram and like, what's new? I figured that they did this for a long time anyway with face, you know, with like how long you sort of linger in Facebook's discovery, Instagram's discovery or search mode. But I know that they're using other data to populate that. So for instance, for whatever reason, a bunch of sneakers I've looked at on other websites that have nothing to do with Instagram in any way whatsoever keep showing up in the Instagram feed. How does Instagram know that I'm into sneakers right now? Like, they shouldn't know for any reason whatsoever.
Oh, Phil, you know how the internet works.
No, I know. I'm saying, what I'm saying is that, like, they don't need to mine photos to... for, you know, contextual information to be able to do half of what they do already. This is not a surprise. It's a non-story.
It is a non-story. But you know what's not a non-story? Mm. Facebook, you know, going through all this turmoil, right? And
that's true.
In the midst of all that, they announced a dating service.
Maybe that's what they need to mine the photos for. It's like hot or not, you know?
Oh my gosh. Isn't that what Facebook was based on, hot or not?
Basically. Well, yeah, it was the Facebook or Face Mash. Was it Face Mash?
Yeah, Face Mash, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it was amazing. We never talked about it on the show because it only happened in the last month, but all of these sort of congressional hearings, how cringy were those? To see Mark Zuckerberg be grilled by completely clueless congressmen about
both sides were cringy. So
it was pretty. Yeah, it was cringy.
Yeah,
that's. But can you imagine now a Facebook dating app?
Set, you know, focused on long-term relationships, no less.
You know what's really sad and sort of scary here is that Facebook actually stands to do the best job of finding people that you would match up with really well.
Yeah.
Right? Facebook knows more about you than, you know, ostensibly anybody on the entire internet. You know, like the OkCupids or the Match.coms of the world or whatever exists in, you know, in 2018, I wouldn't know. But those services only know what you tell them. Whereas Facebook knows literally everything about everybody everywhere all the time because that's their whole job, right? And their population is giant. So I think just lookalike audiences alone, you know, is the kind of feature that they already have that would, you know, allow them to very easily target, like, you know,
maybe this was like, this. Maybe this was the end goal all along. Like this was the
best game
like it's been leading up to this moment. This was Zuckerberg's entire aim from the get go.
I mean, he played it. It was a slow drip, you know, like
slow
20 years.
Slow drip. Exactly. You know,
20 years. And he finally got to the thing that he wanted to do all along, which here's what's absolutely insane. And this was, yeah, I'm going to go on the record saying it'll never actually work like this, but can you imagine, do you remember back in when we were talking about sort of episode 50, 51-ish, when we were talking about the human condition, like what it means to be human?
51.
And right. And what we were, what I sort of surmised was we may be escalating technology to a point where we can actually limit our experience with grief, limit our experience with loss.
Oh, that might not have been 51, but yeah.
I think that was right around there, 49 or something like that.
So, I think I disagreed with you, or like I said that, it, you know, maybe it could help, but it wouldn't really limit it.
but think, I want to put this back into that context, because I can foresee if Facebook had the ability to say, you know, if I, you know, I have a friend of mine who I went to high school with, and she passed away last year. It was the first girl I ever asked to homecoming. It's neither here nor there, but she passed away after a long bout with cancer. And she had a couple recurrences of it. It was really hard fought battle. But can you imagine if her husband, you know, she spent 10 years on Facebook and all of her data is there. Can you imagine if her husband was able to go to Facebook and say, you know, guys, maybe you can suggest someone to me that's exactly like my, you know, my, no, my man, wife. And
Do
you see what I'm saying though? Yeah. Facebook would know who that is in this world and be able to suggest that those two people meet. That's what I'm talking about, is that that's I think we are at the verge of that kind of society. Or the capability exists already in this world that we are creating. And again, I'm not saying that that's what's happening here. I'm saying that the possibility exists, and it goes along with my feeling of sort of what it doesn't mean to actually be human. And is stuff like this is a social network with a population of 2 billion people and the data that we've gathered over the last 20 years, is that changing who we are as a species? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's changing the ways that we operate. I don't know if it's like changing the base of who we are. Like, we're humans. it certainly will change how, I mean, it is, it has, we just talked about this in the last episode. It has changed a lot about how we interact, right? And like what we expect out of the world. And it's amazing how quickly we've adapted to that. It's almost mind blowing how quickly we've adapted to that, because, you know, we're not a frog in boiling water. We are getting thrown into totally new situations all the time, and we're just sort of accepting them.
isn't that the whole point? Like, Homo sapiens are infinitely adaptable. Like, that's what we do. That's why we're at the top of the evolutionary chain. We adapt.
Yeah. Right? And I think, actually it's interesting. I was reading an article, and I should be able to refer back to it, but like, what was it? There's like IQ, there's EQ, and then there's adaptability quotient as well. And how that's like starting to play.
AQ.
Starting to play into like how people view leadership and like what does a good leader look like? It's not just emotional intelligence. It's the ability to adjust and, you know, quickly.
I have to wonder. I just want to point out the fact that you thought we didn't have 30 minutes of content, but
I didn't say that. I said that if we just ran it straight, we had about 25 minutes of content, but I knew that we would.
We could spend 25 minutes on just this, but my concern also extends to the point of, we can adapt, but it takes millennia. If what we know about, you know, science and the way that our evolutionary traits, it takes, and if we believe the current school of thought around the way that our brains evolve is correct, then it takes millennia for us to be able to adapt to the types of social and economic changes, like the social dynamic changes that have happened as a species for us. And the fact that we have to process today more relationships and more that graph theory that comes into effect, the network effect of how people fit together, how people interrelate, and how they react with each other, where our villages and our small, evolutionarily, our small circles of influence were because they were only limited to our proximity of the people that lived right around us, because that's all that we knew and that's all that we could actually get to. And the fact that travel and now social media and those things have broadened our horizons. Now the information age, we have insight into things at a scale that our biology hasn't been able to adapt to yet. That there is a school of thought that says that we have to be able to process human suffering on a scale that we've never had to process before. We've had to be able to process, natural disasters and political crises and all these things that happen that cause stress on the human emotional experience. And we're not suited for that yet. We're getting there. We're going to have to in a hurry. And maybe that's the Darwinism here, in that only the strong are going to be able to survive that, and those who are less adaptable will not be able to survive it. But think about mental health issues. We're more aware of mental health issues, right?
Yeah.
These are things that we're dealing with on a massive scale now, where I would get the sense that there are direct correlations to our exposure to the world at large. And that's new for humanity, right?
Yep. Captains of Spaceship Earth.
thank you, Jason Silva.
Back to the dating thing really quickly.
Yeah, swipe right back to the dating thing.
Swipe right. I see a huge opportunity for commerce.
Okay, so tell me why.
Yeah, think about this. If you have this much data on why people are compatible, couldn't you create situations and provide experiences and products that help facilitate a much better and more, enjoyable dating and, relationship experience?
Yeah, I mean, I swiped right on you. You swiped right on me. Now both of our Facebook apps are in the same room, at 2 o'clock in the morning. And, I get a push notification that says, don't forget to buy Trojans. Would you like Uber to deliver you some Trojans now? Like, I do see plenty of opportunity for commerce. You're right. Absolutely. But outside of that, what did you have in mind?
Yeah, like flowers, recommendations for restaurants, dine-in experiences. I mean, I think as we get into more experiential selling and experiential marketing, which we've been doing a ton of, I mean, for instance, I'm going to Italy, or I would probably be back from Italy by the time it's
airs.
I think, Airbnb hit me up with some emails pre-trip and said, hey, here's how you can best enjoy your time in Italy, right? Or in the city that you're staying in. And it suggested a bunch of things like restaurants and experiences that I could purchase that would help make my time better. So why couldn't you do that for dates? I mean, I guess this isn't Facebook specific, but it seems like there's a big opportunity for commerce here.
Yeah, I would never discount the potential for people to find products to sell to people who are, dating or in a relationship, or, tissues for when they get out of the relationship. Like, yep. Facebook is sensing that we're about to break up.
Yes.
Right. And so that, they're going to go ahead and anticipate with an integration with a popular marketplace service who I said I would not mention. They'll go ahead and ship me, the tissues and the episodes of Dirty Dancing or whatever. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think. What's a breakup movie? What's a breakup movie to watch?
I have no idea, man.
I've been on this tear of '90s, really crappy 90s rom-com type dramas.
You're saying crappy 90s rom-com when in fact they're the best rom-com.
They are the best. Yeah, that's right.
We already talked about this. Like, the 90s were the golden age of movies.
Yeah. So, was it you that I had this whole conversation with about She's All That? In the
Nope, not me.
Okay, so... actually, I know who it was. So I actually had this great conversation with Tony Chiarelli, who...
And when are you getting mixed up?
Yeah, I know. It's really, really hard to keep straight at this point. But I was saying, I sat there for like 10 minutes. I'm like, don't tell me the name of the movie. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I need to figure this out for myself. And I was thinking, I was like, it's Rachel Lee Cook and it's Freddie Prinze Jr. And I can't remember the name of the movie.
Wait, hold on. This relates back to the conversation we had on the last episode, which is... that conversation doesn't have to happen anymore.
That's right. Oh, 100%. Yeah. You're 100% correct. I could have just looked it up, but for whatever reason, I was trying to, you know, connect that neural pathway back to my 90s, you know, teenagehood.
Because you're relating back to, you're just on a 90s tear right now.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Like someone from a 90s.
but the conversation was sort of around the, you know, when you sort of take a liking to a product or a service and somebody, you know, you like, you want to make this work one way or another. Like, it is my makeover moment. Like, my proudest achievement will be when I turn, you know, turn this ship around with this thing that's going to help make it over. It's like, I'm Freddie Prinze, you know, this website is Rachel Lee Cook, and I'm making this thing hot again. That's all I have to do is take off the overalls and the glasses. And the ponytail. I know that there's something good underneath this website. We will find it, you know. Anyway.
Oh my gosh, that's the best.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, all speaking right. of things that are good underneath websites, Twitter doesn't have much of that at the moment.
I know that it just needs to get rid of its ponytail.
Actually, you know what I really love about this story is how incensed and outraged people just want to be at Twitter. But in actuality, Twitter handled this security issue really, really well. Article over on The Verge kind of gets into it a little bit, but 330 million people affected by a Twitter security issue in which there was a service log that they discovered was tracking passwords in plain text, which we all know is a bad, bad, bad thing. And they did the right thing in that they notified every single one of their users and told them you should change your password. And this is why, and we messed up and we're going to do better. And I think that that's really, really cool.
Did your message say, and I'm sure it did, that they didn't think anyone that was actually affected by it?
Yes.
They did research. They didn't think anyone was affected by it. And they just sent out the message to everyone at the same time and said, we fixed it. Change your password now, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty nice handling of it.
And if you have two-factor authentication enabled anyway, I don't know how that could be potentially dangerous. Like,
Philip.
No. Okay. I mean, maybe I'm just losing my touch in the security
realm. No. Two-factor auth is pretty awesome. It's pretty hard to... pretty hard to break that down.
Yeah, unless you're me and people have tried to steal your SIM by transferring your number away from...
target you specifically, then they know that they want to get after you and they know who you are for real, then they can get after your phone and your Twitter account at the same time.
Yeah, well, at any rate, this was one of our predictions at the end of the year in 2017. Yeah. And... it's certainly not going to stop. Lots of security issues. I mean, that it's sort of a non-prediction, but I do see... No,
it was a prediction because I saw other predictions saying that security was going to get better. I was like, are you joking?
I suppose there's only two ways that could go. It's either going to get better or worse. I don't see
that's true. We pick the worst version because that's
because that's what we would do. But I do think that companies are handling it a little better these days. You know, Facebook has owned up to its issue with Cambridge Analytica.
Well, okay, hold on. They're better at owning up.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes things better.
No. I'm saying they're better at owning up. They're working their way back. Like, eventually, we're going to get better at security, I think.
I think there's stats out there on this. I think it takes, like... I can't remember exactly. So someone go do a little data checking on this, but I think it takes like 6 months to a year for most companies to announce that they were hacked, like after the fact.
Sure.
Maybe it was like 90 days. But any way you cut it, your data is long gone by the time someone usually someone announces that there was a hack.
Yeah.
Or for sure. Yeah.
And I've been caught up in it multiple times in the past year. You know, there's the MyFitnessPal hack that was announced that was like a year old by the time it was, announced. There's been a bunch of big announcements that were like retroactive by 18, 24 months, you know, this year alone. What I'm pointing out here, though, is that this was incredibly proactive. In that I don't think that there was actually the surface area of the threat was very large, and that it was, you know, every one of their users were impacted, right? Yeah. Potentially, but it was an internal security issue and not something where the data found its way to,
right. Yeah.
To, you know, no, totally an insecure place. Right.
Yeah.
I wish that we would have that transparency with more companies. Because that's the kind of thing that I honestly truly believe that this is the kind of thing that Twitter doesn't even really have to disclose. I really believe that. That's my own personal stance here. Is
interesting.
You know, if you are internally in, they did the right thing by the customer, but they, you know, from their shareholders' perspective, you know, they're not doing them any favors.
That's true.
Good on them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I think what you see a lot of usually, like, I think you see a lot of business people who don't understand this, that are you know, in most companies, they're either afraid or unaware of how dangerous it can be. And that's why you see these longer cycles.
Let me give an analogy, and I give the worst analogies, but this is akin to what happened. Is that let's pretend for a second that there's a call center, okay, and the call center takes credit cards over the phone, right? So in this theoretical call center, people call in and they're placing orders for products over the phone with a human on the other end, who is taking the order. This particular security issue is akin to those calls having been recorded and those calls having been logged away on some backup tape somewhere that's only accessible to people in the IT department who specifically know what they would be looking for. It's not like it would be right. It's that every single piece of data that flowed through Twitter from first, you know, at some point was logged in plain text somewhere. That was the problem. And the fact is that your data in this call center analogy was never really at risk. Right? Like your credit card that you read to someone over the phone is never really at risk. Is that it's just a poor practice. Certainly against, you know, in that case, when it's card holder data, it's certainly against, you know, certain like compliance, levels of compliance like PCI. But again, from a Twitter perspective, you know, I just to come back again, they did the right thing, but I don't think that they had to raise the flag in the way that they did. I think this is incredibly proactive, and they should be setting a precedent that others should follow their footsteps.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
for sure.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries for every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. eMarsis is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the eMarsis marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, eMarsis connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. eMarsis delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how eMarsis can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsis.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's eMarsis, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
So here's some other interesting things. A couple of new things that we stumbled on that were pretty interesting, fun things to talk about. One of them was Ripple Metrics. And this is basically technology to give retailers better data to more efficiently manage their store staff. And they do this by tracking basically traffic. I thought this was great. I'm sure there are other pieces of tech out there like this. It's just great to see continued focus on the in-store experience. And since that's such a big part of shoppers' experiences today, still, this is essentially, applying what we do on the web to in-store. And, you know, if you, you can almost think about staff like servers, nearly, like how much right. capacity we need to apply to this in order to properly serve our store so it doesn't go down. this is like being able to actually judge what kind of scale you need to have.
Now, having in-store, you know, customer journey analytics is not a thing that is new.
No.
What is interesting here is using that data and applying that data in a predictive way to be able to schedule and place staff in stores based on the data that we're seeing and real-time sort of traffic analysis. So putting people into certain places in very large stores or department stores where they're going to interact with the customers when they're going to be there based on either real-time analytics or predictive analytics or a mix of the both. Which is, I think, tremendous. And it's not just people that are on hand that are in the stores themselves. It's working backwards enough to actually get them on the schedule so that they're ready and ready to assist a customer, and they're actually on duty, on staff, in real time, ready to go. I do want, there is probably, you know, there are companies who've been doing this a long time. I know Walmart, Walmart has, you know, very specifically for 10, 15 years now, employed some really aggressive, staff management and labor management practices into their, you know, timekeeping system. And some people have surmised, and I think it's even been prosecuted to the effect of, you know, they do it to actually, you know, repress a workforce from earning enough money or hours to be able to compensate for benefits and all sorts of other things. But labor optimization is also itself not new. I think it's the combination of these two, these two technologies that I do think gives a better customer experience. And so I definitely wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, there's a whole bunch of companies that do track this, like you said, and the really cool stuff. I think did we talk about smart floors before? I think we may have.
Yeah, potentially, but yeah, remind me.
Yeah, it's a company called Scanalytics that does smart floors. It's pretty interesting. You can track where people are stepping and so on. It's not necessarily like you can't get down to like within inches of where they're at, but like within feet. I don't think they're necessarily using that for staffing, but like, I wonder if we're going to have to, I wonder if someone from the EU comes to a store in the US now, if they're going to have to, you know, do some sort of a receipt of like data. Because we're getting that smart with our stores. I mean,
Or even more so that, you know, maybe a warning, you know, on the outside of stores that are in the EU that when you walk in that you're going to be tracked endlessly, like you're going to have to consent to that implicitly.
Yeah, totally.
Which I think actually is against GDPR. You need explicit consent.
Exactly.
When
that's what I'm saying. You know, that's what you like. They have to like give them like a written document saying that, that you've actually taken data. I was joking sort of with John Swords. Actually, it's the second episode we mentioned John in a row, but about how, well, what happens when you like give someone your business card, right? You have to give them a receipt.
Yeah, you know, I just print on the back of the business card the terms of service, like the link to your privacy policy and terms of service.
Business card, right, you implicitly agree to.
Exactly.
yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, my mind's actually kind of reeling about that. So just kind of close loop on this. You know, store heat maps, those sorts of things, you know, real-time customer tracking. I mean, it's been employed in some really crazy ways over the years, like even to the point of, you know, utilizing in-store free Wi-Fi and even, you know, cell phone signals and Wi-Fi searching that sort of fingerprint a customer so that, you know, and then cross-reference that with actual purchase data, like credit card number, four-digit PAN, that sort of thing. Like those things have all existed, especially for very large retail chains that have the money to spend on that kind of technology. I think, again, small parts of this have existed in the world prior.
Yeah.
I think it's that the idea here is that we're all trying to efficiently manage a workforce when we have a labor force in the United States that is at near full employment.
Yeah.
We're at record low unemployment levels. Most people are employed or overemployed. Most people have more than one job.
I saw an article about how, like, right now, fast food companies are at the highest level of turnover they've been at in like 20 years or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like they can't keep people longer. It's less than a year. And so it obviously, fast food's a low-paying job. It's really like they're the ones that are going to get hit hardest by the turnover, which is why a lot of fast food companies are looking to technology, I think, to address those kinds of roles. It's a good thing, though. I mean, I hope that those workers are finding better jobs that pay more, and they're moving, you know, up and on, and like we can get, you know, I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but I'm for using technology to take over jobs that are, you know, a little bit more, you know, maybe not manual, but just like stuff that should be taken on by technology.
Right. Things that can be automated will be automated, and things that can't, you know, require training and knowledge. Those are the kinds of things you want to invest in. It actually brings me back to the Macy's acquisition of Story, which I think is really transformational in that the experiential retail model really requires, especially when you're changing over things like your brand is sort of ephemeral, or the products that you carry that express the brand is thematic and sort of ephemeral, lives only for a season. You need a workforce that is passionate about the brand, who can tell a story, who can, they're not your typical retail worker who just takes, you know, the dye pack, you know, punch through thing off the pair of jeans. Like it's not a pair of Levi's that have been around for, you know, 100 years that, you know, tell its own story. Like in many ways, that kind of retail is going to require a very skilled workforce in much the same way that we have sommeliers. We're going to need somms of retail to be able to tell the story about, the deep knowledge of how products come into being.
Yeah, totally. I think Nordstrom's been saying that all along. Like if you've ever talked with a Nordstrom,
I have not,
rep, oh my gosh, they're so knowledgeable. It's unbelievable. They know their stuff inside and out. It's almost like, I mean, being a Somme is like insane. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Somme. That's insanity. But no, I mean, they really, really know their stuff. They're experts. They're SMEs. Right. And that's, I think that's where retail is headed. I totally agree. It's going to become a job. Maybe we don't need quite as many people. Like, there are certain things that can be done in an automated fashion, but the people that do work the jobs know a ton about their product. They are very passionate about it, and we start to get into clienteling, like mm-hmm. back to personal long-term relationships. I definitely see that ahead.
We're not even through our list yet. We've got 30 to 40 minutes of content.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Really quickly. Two more things really quickly. Yeah. One, something that definitely cannot be automated. I think you were pretty stoked on this. I'm definitely stoked on this too. This is a pretty interesting story. We got this one from our friend Andrea Wasserman from the Captain Customer newsletter, from her CPG newsletter that she sent out not too long ago. There's a company called Take Care Of. Care Of. Sorry. Take Care Of is the website.com. Care Of is the name of the company. And they put together a wellness pack that's specific to you. Philip, you're pretty stoked on this. What do you see that's interesting about it?
So this goes along with one of my predictions, and you remember there's I was talking about personalized products, like products that are actually manufactured specifically mm-hmm. for you based on, you know, your criteria or your personal health, you know, goals. This literally is the embodiment of that. And now I'm sure that this has existed in the world before. I don't want to get a whole bunch of like, don't at me, bro, because I don't really care what you think. No, I'm like, I'm sure that there have been, you know, personalized services like this in the past. What I find really fascinating about Care Of is that it actually is personalizing your experience of your engagement with their brand based on your disposition to how you view vitamins and supplements. So a really good example of that is they sort of give you a barometer right up front, like, how are you with vitamins? Do you already take vitamins? Yes or no? How are you on whether they have a health benefit for you or not? Are you a big fan or are you a skeptic? So I would say, yes, I take it, but I am a skeptic. And then they ask you other things like, are you into Ayurveda? Are you skeptical about that? And all of those questions then lead you into a personalized health survey, which is about 55 questions. And you answer a bunch of things that are everything from family medical history to your own personal health goals. It talks a lot, it asks a bunch of, you know, mental health questions, make sure you're not like taking SSRIs and all these other things that, you know, might interfere with their suggestions. But at the end of the day, it comes down to making personalized recommendations on vitamins and supplements. And I would be totally skeptical. I am very skeptical about anything that's not just a multivitamin. However, because they know I'm a skeptic, because I self-identified as a skeptic up front, the thing that they prioritize in my health report is double-blind case studies that were performed by the USDA and Food and Drug Administration that actually go a long way to sort of proving the efficacy of some of the products that they're putting in front of me. And I was blown away that they were selling to me as a skeptic specifically, and that they personalized that all of the experience from there on was really helping me make a very informed choice, and linking out to the studies, letting you read into it. And so it was like, you're doing all this incredible research. But beyond that, beyond just telling me, here's what you should take, they actually prepackage it into a 30-day supply that sort of looks like, you know, it's like a Tosimo, you know, box sort of a thing, where it's, you know, like a grab box where you're pulling out one packet at a time for your daily vitamins, only the vitamins in the dosage that you've suggested for your daily amount, or that you've opted into for your daily amount, are in a single package. So you'll have 30 packages for 30 days, and every one of them are personalized with your name on it, like for Philip. And each of those packages, and like sort of a tear open pouch, has like a little inspirational quote on it. Anyway, every part of this feels very personal, like extremely personal.
This gets back to another prediction that we had also, right. which is you just handed over a lot of data.
Personal data. A lot of my data. Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah. And
willingly, because you got something for it. And it was very clear what data you were handing over. I mean, this is, I mean, honestly, this is data that Facebook probably doesn't have on you.
Well, they do now because I bet you there's a Facebook pixel on that website. I guarantee it.
Right.
Yeah.
But no, this was data they didn't have on you. Hopefully they still don't. And you willingly handed it over because you wanted something that was useful for you.
Right. And I do think that, you know, it is information that, you know, I do find valuable and it's a product that I already was purchasing. Like, by the way, I would never have gone down this rabbit hole if my subscribe and save order from the company who shall not be named wasn't canceled because the product that I was taking before, which is a combined fish oil and multivitamin, is no longer available. They're not selling on Amazon anymore and they're not selling through resellers anymore. They're only selling wholesale to, like, you know, grocery stores, and it's a very expensive product. And when I run out of it, it's kind of hard to find. Like, I have to go to the grocery store. Maybe they have it, maybe they don't. I don't want to hunt down products. Like, I know I want it. I know I need it. I'm going to take it anyway. I might as well go and shop around and find it. That's how I found this. Is that I had a need. I went in search of a solution and I found what I feel like is the better customer experience. This is what experiential retail and digital commerce looks like, is that it's incredibly personal. And I hope that they don't stay where they are. I would love to see this company actually grow that into other areas. I'd love to see them actually grow into, you know, I don't know, more in the, like, I don't want them to go like crazy in the supplements and stuff like that. But I'd love to have like a Q&A service where I can ask them questions. I'd love to, you know, be able to say, you know, hey, I'm looking for a protein supplement, you know, to, it's like a workout, recovery drink or something. The other health related things.
Yeah,
I would absolutely buy into that for sure. 100%. And they're probably listening to me through my smart speaker right now. So they probably know that I just said that. And
no, Facebook's listening to you through your smart speaker right now. Oh, I see what you're saying now. I thought you meant Gareth. Anyway. So no, that's good. It's good.
There were others on this blog, by the way. That was one that was listed specifically in the Captain Customer blog. Another one that wasn't on my radar, but I find really interesting, is a company called Billy, which is basically like Dollar Shave Club, but for women. And, you know, essentially it's, you know, replenishment. Like the actual title of the blog was Fun with CPG Replenishment, but it's like, you know, Captain Customer, here's a few brands that we found that are sort of interesting for, you know, for you know, products that, you know, can be easily subscribed to, but and, you know, you may not have heard of them, but I find it really interesting. They all have really beautiful sort of customer experiences too.
Totally. No, good stuff. And thanks, Andrea, for putting that list together.
Yeah, for sure.
One more thing before we log off. I think there was an article in the New York Times recently about AI. AI as a profession, and experts in the AI industry. And it was kind of focused on Facebook opening new labs in Seattle and Pittsburgh. And they just hired some really notable professors from Carnegie Mellon and University of Washington. And there is just an insane amount of pressure on the AI talent market right now. It is getting crazy. Like, I think the offers are exponentially higher than any teaching salary that any of these professors had before. It's just hard to turn down an offer like that when, I think, you know, when they're offering that kind of money. And so, you know, as this continues to grow, AI is just going to get bigger and bigger. We're going to need better ways of educating for it. And if we take all of our professors out of schools, then we're not going to have anyone left.
I don't know if that's a legitimate concern, but it sounds like a thing that might be a problem.
Yeah. No, I don't know if it's a legitimate thing either. But in short, this is a crazy market. I think this is, you're going to see that retailers are going to have to rely on outside sources for AI, and it won't be as much in-house because they just won't be able to find anyone.
Yeah, you won't find the talent. I mean, unless you are very, 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 very large and you can attract that sort of talent away, they're definitely going to be finding their homes in, you know, the sort of purpose-built technology companies that can utilize, yeah. you know, yeah. their skills. Yeah, that's really interesting too. I guess I've not thought of, you know, a lot of that skill set is found in academia, and is found in actual sciences these days. And so, gosh, yeah, that would be a terrible brain drain for the next generation if we take those people out of education and out of research, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, in general, usually companies do a pretty good job of like training people as well, but like, I hope that it's such a complex field. And it's so limited, and there's so much need. We're gonna need to invest more in training around it. Money is gonna have to flood into the education market around this.
Yeah, especially around that is a timely conversation right now here in the United States. But I also see sort of that effect of the long tail effect of what education has, you know, on people's lives and their livelihoods, and how they grow up and they have influence on other people, is something I think a lot about. I said this the other day, give a man a fish and shame on me, or shame on you, right? Teach a man a fish and shame on me, which is sort of a portmanteau of two different idioms. But I find that sort of funny because it's kind of true. Like we all sort of pay the price when you, that knowledge, once it's out, once that knowledge has been dispersed to another person, they take it and they can do with it what they want. It's
well, that's a good place to wrap it up, I would say. another episode with 25 minutes worth of content that we managed to stretch out to much longer than that.
I don't know, my friend. I think we went super deep on some stuff and people love us. That's what I think.
All right. Well, I hope you all enjoyed the deep dive we took on some of these things. Thank you for listening to Future Commerce. As always, we'd love to have you leave us some feedback here on futurecommerce.fm. In our comments box, or on Facebook, or on Twitter, or on LinkedIn, or wherever you can find us, or direct email, whatever it is. Also, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, leave us a 5-star, or subscribe anywhere that you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter on futurecommerce.fm. It's really easy to sign up for and get some great content that way. Always love to have you on the list. So with that, we'll say goodnight, or it's goodnight for us. Goodbye.
Buenas noches. Retail tech moves fast.
But we're moving faster. Future commerce moves faster.
We'll get it right one of these days. Thanks for listening.
We really will. Bye.